Welcome to the new Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on the local Colorado economy and initiatives that focus on the development of cybersecurity economics. You don't have to be a computer or cybersecurity expert to get plugged in. Your host, Chris Gorog, brings it straightforward, asks the tough questions, and brings the cyber world to a level of understanding for everyone. Chris is personable and opens up with our guests on the issues we all would like to see addressed. You can find us on the web at www.newcyberfrontier.com. Now join our host as he introduces the topic for today's New Cyber Frontier.
So welcome today to the New Cyber Frontier. Today we have a guest on with us. We have Don Roth Lindell, who is the Senior Vice President and Chief Information Officer at the Western Area Power Administration. That's the only part I have to make sure I get all right.
Right, yeah, there you go. You did very well.
Did good, okay. And today we're going to talk about cybersecurity as it applies especially to utilities. So, and we talked a little bit before, and I said, Don, we want to use you as an expert reference for cybersecurity in the utility area, because so often, especially here in this Colorado effort, that so many of the players are government cybersecurity, from the military, from information security, and thinking about clearances and, you know, cloak and dagger things, you know. But really, today we're going to talk about how the utility companies fit in. And from my experience, they're a bigger piece than the government security. They're just not as well defined. There's more devices out there. Have you ever had any scale as to how big the utility cybersecurity industry is versus kind of the government information security? Do you have any stats on that?
Well, I don't have stats on it, but what I often tease my government counterparts about is they're really focused on information security, and they need computers in order to be able to do that. And those computers run on electricity. And our job is to supply that electricity always, 7x24, every day of the year. So on Christmas, yes, we are indeed working and supplying that electricity. On July 4th, sure enough, while those fireworks are going off, we are actively working and supplying that electricity. That reliability of that electric grid is crucial. It's crucial to every person across the U.S. and across the world, whatever their business, and we take that responsibility very seriously. Protecting that grid is just crucial from physical threats or from cybersecurity threats.
Mm-hmm. And that is a different way of looking at cybersecurity than what the government information security takes. And that's a little bit about what we're going to talk about today. But first of all, we want to get your background. So tell us about yourself, Don. Sure. How did you get to where you're at?
Sure, very interesting. I'm often asked, well, did you always want to be a chief information officer? No.
That was my next question.
I wanted to be a veterinarian. But I really became interested in math and science. All of those kinds of things excited me. And so when I went to college at the great University of Notre Dame, I studied chemical engineering. I was always interested in chemistry as well. And that logical problem solving served me well throughout my career. I grew up on a farm in Indiana, and there I learned some good core values. Mm-hmm. One of my dad's rules was that the animals eat first, and if there's time before the school bus comes for you to have breakfast, great, and if there's not, you're going to school without breakfast. So that responsibility to take care of those who depend on us was really drilled into me. The second lesson from that life is that when we have a problem, we've got to figure out how to solve it. Nobody's going to come fix it for us. And while in a farming community, people are great at helping each other out, the problems are ours to resolve. So we need to pick them up, we need to own them, and we need to work those. So when people ask me, well, how did you map out your career to get where you are? My advice to anyone is solve the problems where you are. And sometimes I get the question, well, how do I know what the problems are? Ask the people. So when I start any role, I always ask, what do you like about working here? And I want to do more of that. what would you change if you could? And that tells me the problems that exist currently and where I might focus to find some ways to enable people to do their jobs better. And that one single focus really has been key in helping me to do the best job I could in whatever role I held and get the opportunities for promotion. Mm-hmm. It will also get you lots more problems to solve. Once people figure out that you can solve them, they're happy to give you more.
Mm-hmm. So what we're going to talk about here, we have some things first, but exactly where you're at is, what are the problems that you're solving and what did you come into here at the Western Power area?
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Definition of cybersecurity.
Sure. For me, cybersecurity consists of any protective and preventive measures to enable us to prevent any kind of infiltration, unwanted attack, unwanted information leak, whether it's data or systems. Mm-hmm. So anything that we can do to prevent or mitigate the risk to data and to our computer systems, for me, would fall under that definition of cybersecurity.
Okay. So does that take on more of a what I can do now to prevent things from happening for you, or what do I design to make it stronger so it doesn't happen?
It's both of those. The FireEye CEO, Dave DeWalt, in November of 2014, I believe, did a 60 Minutes interview. And in that interview, he said 97% of all companies have already been hacked. So prevention is critical. Making it difficult to get in is really important so that hopefully people may give up and go on to the next guy instead of trying to infiltrate the systems that we manage. But it would be pretty naive to believe that we can always keep out those who intend to hack in. Mm-hmm. So the second component to that is ensuring that we can identify rapidly when we've been hacked and do our best to eradicate whatever that threat is, whether it's malware, whether it's a data leak, etc. The other thing that Dave DeWalt said in that interview, he said that the average time from breach to discovery, the average time from when we're hacked to when we know we've been hacked, is 229 days. That is two-thirds of a year mm-hmm. that someone has to be in the network, unnoticed and unknown, scoping out other attack vectors, leaving behind bits of malware that they can come back and use later. That puts us at a significant risk. So that rapid identification of threat is crucial. And then the third component of that is to, there's Kara, sorry. The third component of that is to ensure that we are doing our best to think ahead and prepare ahead for where that next vulnerability is and where that next threat vector is coming from. A few years ago, I was mortified to find that my own computer at home, I had malware on it and I could not figure out how to get it off. It's a little embarrassing to have my job and mm-hmm. not be able to clean my own computer. So I finally gave up, I took it into Best Buy, and they couldn't clean it up either. They had to wipe it. That actually made me feel a little better. They had to wipe it and start over. But I asked them, you know, I said, gosh, I've taken all of these steps for security at home. What am I missing? And they said, ma'am, there are 800 new pieces of malware every single day. So you're not going to be able to prevent against all of those. And sure enough, as I've dug into the capability of the best antivirus tools out there, the very best, and we use some of the best, they can prevent 60% of malware. That's an F. That means 40% can still get through. Why? Because it just requires some coding changes, and then that malware can sneak back in. It requires one naive person succumbing to a phishing attack for that to get in, again, making it crucial that we can identify when that happens and eradicate quickly.
So what can we do to make that better?
Oh, I just wish there was an easy answer to that, because if there was, I would buy it. I think continuously training our employees, there's some naivety to thinking that we can train and educate good cybersecurity professionals, and we give them that education once and they're good. Mm-hmm. That simply isn't the case. People have to constantly learn. Our technology evolves very quickly. It's believed that we have a full turn of technology improvement every 4 years. If that's the case, then we need to have a full education of our staff every 4 years to keep current with what's out there. And for our cybersecurity staff, with 800 new pieces of malware potentially hitting the internet every single day, we just have to constantly be vigilant and look out at that, look out at how we can keep our employees educated and as much up to speed as possible. The second piece that we can do is ensure we stay current in our software, our tool sets, our hardware, and our patching. Because as vulnerabilities are discovered, vendors send out patches. If we ignore those, if we don't apply them, if we don't stay current, then we put our systems at risk. And staying current can be somewhat expensive. It costs money to have people available to complete that patching and do that effectively with good testing. It costs money to stay current and upgrade our systems as new versions come out. But it's just crucial that we make that investment. Making that investment in our systems pays off in stronger cybersecurity and resilience.
So I heard two things. The first one, training employees.
Yes.
Now, as a CIO, the challenges you probably have heard, face these. How do you engage people? How do you make them want to do it? Because literally, so many times I hear, well, that's the security guy's job. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to have to go through all that training. I don't want to have to understand it and learn it. And those are our people that cause the biggest problems. So how do we engage the everybody aspect?
You know, it's so interesting that you say that. I speak often on cybersecurity, and one of the things that I talk about is the insider threat. And when we think about the insider threat, we think about an angry, irate, disenfranchised employee, and that's a risk. We need to ensure our supervisors have the training to identify when employees are feeling that way and take the preventive measures that we need to keep the system safe. I think the bigger insider threat is the employee who means well but makes a mistake, the employee who's social engineered. So to that end, most cybersecurity training honestly is pretty boring. And I gotta tell you, ours can be pretty boring too. It's a challenge to find interesting cybersecurity training and educate quickly in a way that's meaningful. We have started a campaign here at Western Area Power Administration that is an anti-phishing campaign. It turns out Verizon did a study, I think in 2012, that identified that 98% of malware comes in through two primary vectors. One is phishing campaigns, and the second is visiting infected websites and accidentally downloading. So we've started this anti-phishing campaign, and our cybersecurity team here are creating fake phishing emails designed to rope people in. So the first one they sent out was to our maintenance folks, designed to look like it came from a vendor we use regularly, with an opportunity, I think, to earn a free jacket, and to see how many people would click. I'm proud to say the maintenance community responded really, really well. And not too many of them even opened the email, let alone clicked through it, less than 10%. We then designed a phishing email for our financial community. Really crucial those folks are not succumbing to that. And a few more of them, they're on their computers every day, so it's understandable. A few more of them did succumb, I think about 15%. So fairly low response rate, but the anti-phishing campaign gives people the opportunity to sort of have that emotional reaction when they accidentally click on something they shouldn't have and they get the feedback right away of, oops, this was actually a phishing email and here's how you could have known that. And here's some feedback for you on how to prevent that the next time. So we're evolving in our training. We do require annual training for every employee. We do require every employee to pass, I think at 80%, the questions that follow that, the questions on the test that follow that training, so that we can help to educate and help to ensure they know what to watch out for.
We'll be right back with the rest of today's show right after these brief messages from our sponsors. Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Second part of that, you said keeping up on patches, software, hardware. Now that's dollars, that's directly related. And that's probably the one that when we get into what does the operational, what does the power grid versus IT, yes. I mean, literally we've just been talking about the people aspect. Mm-hmm. So if we switch over to the software aspect, the vendors are pushing that out. That's a little bit more frequent, able to maintain with a diligence of updates. But now equipment. Mm-hmm. How many billions of dollars of equipment are on the electric grid? Now tell us about the problems we have there.
Sure. One of the really innate and inherent problems with the electric grid is that it's a lot older than cybersecurity. We started being able to do alternating current transmission in the late 1880s, and built that build out for today's transmission system began in the 1890s. We didn't even have computers back then. Mm-hmm. And so we've built a grid to be very reliable. Most of us don't have to go without electricity very long ever, even if there is an outage from some poor squirrel who's chewed through to the bitter end a wire and caused a small local outage. But now we manage that grid to reduce costs with automation. And that automation brings with it some vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. And again, the idea of automation occurred before the true understanding of the nature of the threat also was fully understood. That's really only become visible perhaps in the last decade or so. Mm-hmm. And so given that, we are playing some catch up to ensure that we architect our grid in such a way to keep it secure. So for us, for Western Area Power Administration, one of the things that we've done, as many of the larger and medium-sized utilities have done, is to completely, to the best of our ability, separate our operational technology network from our information technology network. Now, both use the same kind of tools, both require very similar protections, but we can keep our operational technology network off of the internet. And that dramatically reduces the exposure, for example, to those 800 new viruses that hit that internet every day that we can simply keep off of the operational technology. side of things. We also do security monitoring so that we can understand when anything's behaving differently. That should alert us that there may be a problem. That's that detection piece that's crucial. And then we follow the NIST standards, the National
Institute of Standards and Technology.
Thank you. I appreciate you helping me out with that acronym. We follow the NIST standards, as does the rest of the federal government, in terms of protecting our system and building secure enclaves. So separated logical and physical separations of various parts and components of our network so that even if we have an infection in one area, we can keep that infection from spreading to another. And again, that also enables us to narrow the focus that our security operations centers have to give to specific areas of the grid. That way we can probably identify problems more quickly. If we have to watch the whole thing all at once, it's a little harder. But if we can sort of segment it off, it becomes a little bit easier to identify that. So
myself being a part of that mass disconnection, we'll say, creating an air gap, separating the networks with utility companies. Do you think that's a long-term solution, that we can just always keep two of every network, one for OT operations and one for the IT, the information technology side?
I think it's a crucial part of the long-term solution. But I also know that even air gap systems can be breached with one little thumb drive. It only takes one infected thumb drive to bridge that gap.
And two components on a wireless network in proximity that are on those two networks.
Yes, assuming we're using a wireless network, which, you know, again, where we run and how we run that operational technology just becomes really crucial to what we connect to. I would also say, though, that it's not enough to always think prevention. It's naive to always think prevention. We've also got to think detection and then eradication once we find whatever's out there. So that continuous monitoring and diagnostic component is pretty crucial and not to be overlooked, because if we are so proud to think that we've created an indestructible network, then I think we have a pretty rapid ability to fall from grace.
And it sounds like if we're just isolating networks, we're not even really thinking about the indestructibility. We're thinking about the air gap, the non-connectability portion.
Right. I don't want to leave you with the impression that it's just isolating. It is also building the secure tools around that and then the continuous monitoring. But the isolation is really important, and it's something I communicate to you, smaller utilities all across the U.S. as I speak to rural electric authorities and groups of rural electric authorities, those small but mighty utility companies that keep the small towns and small communities and rural farmers on that grid, but don't have the kind of resources that a large utility does. If we can do as much as possible to segment, then we just reduce the risk. It's just a risk reduction, risk mitigation strategy to segment as much as possible.
Okay. Let me take a little break here.
Sir?
I just want to let you get a drink.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll grab one too.
And this is Carol Lamb. She is our...
Hi, Carol. Good to meet you. Chris Gore. Well, that's okay. Okay. So shifting a little bit to the Colorado effort, and the governor has said he wants to make cybersecurity a blue ocean strategy, a key focus for economic development in Colorado, and especially Colorado Springs. And in my talks with quite a few people, I've noticed that there is quite a bit of the people that are in the effort, the background of them are from these military institutions we have in town and the information security. And I really wanted to accent in the utility side of this. And really, a lot of times people see this as the Internet of Things. It's really everything that's connected, everything that's electrically powered becomes part of the networks. And how does that move forward. And I think a big piece of that is starting with the power infrastructure. So what recommendations would you make to people in this effort, part of it, as from, you know, Western Power Association, to integrate a utility focus as well as a information security military focus in this effort?
Sure. My understanding of the effort is that it has three areas of focus: a research and development focus, a threat and recovery, threat analysis and recovery focus for government, businesses, etc., and then also an education and information sharing focus. So the research and development and the threat and recovery operation offer real opportunities for good, solid information on the threats that exist and how to mitigate against them. So for me, with our job, our mission here at Western Area Power Administration to provide that safe and reliable hydroelectric power and transmission services, we need to keep that grid up and running every single day, zero downtime, which means we need to have no physical or cyber impacts on that grid and that reliability. And that enables everyone else to do their job, restaurants to be able to provide food to patrons because they need to have their electricity on to do that. The government to execute its mission and DOD to execute its mission requires electricity. So we take that very seriously. My job in keeping our cybersecurity information top of mind here at Western Area Power Administration, here at WAPA, means that I need good, solid information about the threats and vulnerabilities that are out there and how they might impact us. It doesn't do me any good to hear that a wind farm in Nebraska was hacked 3 weeks ago. That's worrisome, that's interesting, and that doesn't tell me what to look for or how to prevent us from succumbing to the same attack. So I'm looking for, what is the attack? What did it do? What was the code associated with the attack? Where does it typically reside, and how can I find it if it's on my system, and how can I get rid of it if it's on my system? That kind of information sharing needs to happen as close to real time as possible. Here's the problem. If I find a vulnerability on my system and I share that real time, I may still be vulnerable, and it's an invitation to others to hack me when I'm vulnerable. So we need to create a trusted environment with limited visibility to those who aren't in the same role.
So limited participation.
Limited participation. So in other words, open to anyone in the utilities who's a CIO or CISO, a cybersecurity professional. But not open to those who don't have a need to know until the vulnerability problem is resolved.
So do you think that this could be put into this National Cyber Center as part of that? And where would that could fall under? Which is that the response? Is that the casualty response, or you think?
I think it is. I think it's that threat and mitigation response. If we could create a trusted venue where if I'm seeing, so for example, let's say today, God forbid, I'm hit with a ransomware attack here at WAPA. And if I could right away put out to the broader community, hey, we got hit with ransomware. It came in on an email that read like this. It looks like it's looking to encrypt files on our shared drives. This is the way we have resolved that. We have gone ahead and stopped our business, and we've said we're going to take a couple of hours and restore our systems to what they were prior to getting this ransomware email, and therefore we've taken care of the problem. Then I'm telling my partners, my counterparts in the community, this is what I saw, this is how you can find it, and this is how you can educate your staff members on what to look for, and this is how you get rid of it. That actually is really helpful, and I would love it if we could if we could find a way to resolve that information sharing issue.
Is there any organizations or sharing agencies already doing that or is trying to?
There are agencies trying to do it, and here's the problem. So, for example, the EISAC, the Electric Sector Information Sharing and Analysis Center, that is their goal. But those of us in the industry are really concerned that the information be anonymized in order so that no one knows where the risk actually occurred, and that takes time. And that time, electrons move at the speed of light, so that time puts risk to the rest of us. And so we almost need to have some kind of industry-specific trusted group for the rapid information sharing, and then a way to let the impacted organization communicate through their normal public affairs strategy when they're ready to communicate to their publics.
Okay, so that's a good takeaway. What about in the research and development areas? What could you use support with from that research and development wing?
Sure. Always looking for what are the trends out there, what are we seeing in terms of attacks, and what vulnerabilities might they discover. We've had, just in the last couple of years, multiple vulnerabilities. The Heartbleed vulnerability comes to mind. Havox, which was malware focused on utility Trojan. So as we discover those vulnerabilities on Microsoft, I think just a couple weeks ago there was a discovery of an Apple vulnerability in older iOS versions. Mm-hmm. So getting that information and dispersing it rapidly is, again, really crucial.
So that's designing some kind of tools and system to make that possible.
Yes, to make that possible. And having the folks do that research. And then perhaps leveraging communication networks that are already out there. For instance, the EISAC that I mentioned earlier does a great job of communicating those kinds of threats and vulnerabilities where they're, where it's a known threat, known vulnerability, and getting that information out.
What about on the operational side? Do you think that's the same need there? Do you have any different needs that you think cyber could address? We could research on the operational network side?
Always looking for help and information on that. It will be interesting to see how this effort develops and where they partner. So, for instance, there's already an industrial control system computer emergency response team, or maybe it's cyber emergency response team. It's ICS CERT. And a key piece of a good R&D effort, I think, sources potential partners. And so one of the things I really enjoy about Ed Anderson, who's heading up that effort, is that he, in addition to being a phenomenal leader, is also a coalition builder and very collaborative. And I think he'll do a good job of bringing together the right external entities to shorten that R&D window, to give that that scientific side, rapid information sharing between that community so that we can further that more quickly.
Yeah. So now the tough question.
Sure. Oh, these have been the easy ones.
Yeah.
Darn.
Who pays for all this?
Yeah, that is a difficult, that's always the difficulty.
Uh-huh.
Everyone agrees on the need and everybody wants it for free, right? So I think coming up with that value proposition will be part of the challenge that Ed and his team face. And creating the understanding of the need with the small business community. So when do small entities understand that they need cybersecurity? Well, they understand it when they've been hacked. Mm-hmm. And gosh darn it, that's too late. So doing a good job of the marketing and education component, I think, is just crucial. Because it's tough. Most people think of IT sort of similar to the way you think about your car if you're not an automotive expert. You know, I get in my car, I put the key in, I turn it on, I want the thing to run. Mm-hmm. Every single time. And yeah, I'll take it in for maintenance. I understand I need to do that, but I don't really get what they do in there. I know they open the hood and I go sit in the room and have coffee and do my work while they're doing their thing. Most people think about IT like that too. They come into their office, they turn on their computer, they want their applications to run. They have no idea how that works behind the scenes. They just expect it to be up and running. And they don't really care. They don't really want to. But that's how the perpetrators are exploiting, using social engineering, using phishing, to access systems they perhaps shouldn't. I mentioned earlier the use of a thumb drive can bridge that physical gap. So how might you get someone interested in a thumb drive? Well, you leave it in the parking lot and mark it salaries or confidential. Darn, we're a curious race, aren't we?
Yes!
We humans. Just hard to resist wanting to plug that thing in and see what's on it. So educating across all staff just becomes so critical.
Okay. So as far as from your perspective, what would you say success of this National Cyber Center effort would be? How would you recommend successfully integrating the utilities, what you do here, with that effort?
Yes. For me, success of any organization is delivery of their mission effectively and in a high-value, cost-conscious way. So I believe in the mission of this effort. It's a good, solid mission. What I need to keep in mind is how I can deliver cost-effective, reliable hydroelectric power and transmission services in a value-added way to my customers. And where I want to utilize the tools and technology and processes that come out of this effort is to further my own mission. So I think that where we can get that at a high value, that makes a lot of sense. So do I have the funds to do a vast research and development effort in cybersecurity? No, I don't. But I could leverage someone else who's doing that research and development and pay a much smaller fraction of the cost than it would cost to gain that information by myself. Okay. The same thing with information sharing. I only have visibility to the world that I manage. I don't have visibility into lots of other efforts. And so if we can find a way to bridge that gap where other entities can see what I see and I can see what they can see, again, very effective furthering of my mission and something that I can share with my customers too.
Okay. So kind of in closing, is there anything that you need help with here, you think the public should know about that would further your effort or help you out with what you're doing? How can they get involved? What would that be?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think that every person on the planet who uses any kind of technology at all, and frankly, that's most of us on the planet, really does need to have at least a basic understanding of the risk of the tool that they're using and how to protect themselves from that. So take the time, maybe just 15 minutes a quarter, to read some articles and self-educate on how they can best identify and prevent risks to the technology tools that they use every day in their lives. And don't be afraid of technology. It's there to help you, but understand so that we don't make foolish errors on what we open, what we click on, what information we provide to strangers.
And I think they'll get a lot out of our talk here today, and that's what we're about here at New Cyber Frontier, is understanding and hopefully getting out some information in a way that we can listen to on the way to work or as we're doing our normal day. And maybe we don't have time to seek out all those articles that we read through half of them like, oh, we already heard that, so we move on, right?
Yes.
And the good nugget was down just a paragraph below where we stopped.
Yeah.
So
thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it.
And it was great having you on, Dawn.
Thank you
very much. And for the listeners out there, I hope you gathered a lot from this and an understanding of what we need to look at with the power grid. Thanks a lot. Have a great day.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember to get involved. Often we think that someone else will handle privacy and security in the virtual world, but you are the only one truly in command of your virtual fate. Join our mailing list so we can keep you informed of breaking news and new releases. If you have an idea, if you have a question that you would like to hear answered, or if you want to get involved with our efforts, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, as they are the ones that really make this show possible. I want to thank each of you for supporting the show, and we look forward to seeing you back for the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.